Let's face it, parenting is the most important job on earth. Every day presents a stack of different challenges, and more often than not, the answer is outside of the box. On this podcast, we will offer proven strategies, interview pioneers in education, give insights into how to be successful parents, and even share our imperfect experiences of being parents ourselves. We're all in on this journey, and we will span the globe to find out what is working and who has the answers. This is the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast. Here are your hosts, Darren McCarthy and Brian Powers.
Welcome, Dr. Terry Rouse. Great to have you here. We're happy to have you on the show. Tell us a little bit more about your background and what you do.
Okay, well, Brian and Darren, thank you so much for having me on the show today. I am a mentor and a teacher. I love to travel. I'm an author and a storyteller, but the most important thing that I am is a parent and someone who cares passionately for the well-being of children and how their families function. And my background is in education, special education in particular. I've worked with those kids that have been considered the unteachable, meaning behaviorally they are like off the charts. And so that's only one part of who I am. I'm also the stepmother of a child who has had some pretty severe behavioral issues in and of itself. So going through a lot of different things while he was growing up, trying to find help, trying to find resources that would be beneficial for not only for him, but for us, I couldn't find anything. So I've kind of made it my mission as an educator and as a parent to reach out to parents and to kids and try and help them find their way through the muck of behavioral issues. Mm-hmm. Because behavioral issues don't just affect the child, they affect the entire family. Sure. And so that's the part that is really important to kind of focus on. It's not an individual, it's a family situation.
Right. Well, you know, I have this philosophy that, you know, some parents, if you have this background in working with kids that have like severe behavioral challenges, like, oh, that's not my kid. Mm-hmm. But what they don't realize is if you can work with kids like that, you know, that's kind of the far end of the spectrum. Everything else kind of falls in between, right? You've seen it all.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and I think parents could just kind of open their eyes to you know what, if we have one little behavioral challenge, it falls in the spectrum and these are the people that can handle it. You know?
Right. Right. And I think that's important. You know, it's little problems grow into big problems. Mm-hmm. And so if you can take action before they get into this, I want to say habit or cycle is more like it, of challenging behaviors, you have a better shot at actually getting it under control and not only getting it under control, but actually exhausting it, getting rid of it, because there's a possibility that you are going to find the reasoning behind it. Behavior always has a reason. Mm-hmm. You know, kids don't behave just because. Mm-hmm. In my experience, they're behaving because they're trying to tell you something and we're not understanding what they're trying to say to us. And mm-hmm. so when you see a child in the grocery store falling out on the floor because they can't have the box of Cocoa Puffs, it's not necessarily because they want the box of Cocoa Puffs. It's because they want something and mm-hmm. you're saying no. And that's okay as a parent to say no. Yeah. You know.
Right. Coming up against boundaries, right?
Right.
True. I mean, and then the other side and is kind of also not always saying no and giving a little bit of control on that side, on their side as well.
Absolutely.
Fill that bucket.
Absolutely. You know, I want you to stop and think about it for a second. Like, you like to be in control of things, right? I like to be in control of everything, but the reality is that, you know, it doesn't happen that way.
That's another podcast.
That's that's another podcast for parents. No, but seriously, when you stop and think about it, everybody likes to be in control of something, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that as an adult, we do every day, multiple times, hundreds of times each day, is that we make choices and we make decisions. And we are in control of things, some more than others. How did we learn to do that? Okay, because it is a learning curve. The more decisions you make, the better you get at making decisions. Mm-hmm. So if we give children the opportunity to make decisions and choices, as they get older, hopefully, not always, but hopefully, they're going to make smarter, safer, better decisions. Mm. So again, stop and think about it. If you say, if your kids never make a decision, decision or a choice, if you are constantly, you know, driving the car, so to speak, mm-hmm. and your kids get to be 15, 16, 17, and they go to a party and somebody says, here, have a beer. And they go, okay, because they've never made a decision. They've never had to decide, is this something I should do? Is this something I shouldn't do? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of an extreme thing. And yes, that is a life and, or could be a life and death situation. So before we get there, let's give kids an opportunity to make some decisions and choices.
Right.
I'm not saying give them the car keys at 7. I'm not
although
saying
they want them.
Or a credit card. I'm saying, you know, let's stop and think about some things that decisions and choices that kids can make that are not necessary, that are not life-changing, but are important to them and give them a sense of control and give them a sense of purpose and let them make those decisions.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's funny you mentioned this. We ran up against this literally last night. And, you know, the kids are getting into that age where they want to go out to eat. And so we're doing it every once in a while as a treat. But like last night, they wanted to go to this one specific place and it was a good hour wait. And normally where I would have made the decision and we would have been moved on, they were upset. So we let them make the decision. It was amazing how it changed the tone in the car. Once mm-hmm. we said to the three of them, hey, you make the decision and tell us what you want to do.
Yeah,
you're right. A little bit of control, but you don't necessarily think about it that way, and or weren't raised that way. So
right. Well, I know I wasn't raised that way, and that's not a dig at my parents.
No.
My parents were, you know, at the time, you know, they did the very best that they could. They did a pretty good job, I think. But I think that, as an example, I didn't learn how to balance a checkbook until I went away to college. You know, that's something that. And that has, you know, nothing to do with decision making, so to speak, but, you know, a decision on their part was that they always took care of that. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I went away to college and I'm like, oh my gosh, how do I write a check? You know, it's one of those life skill things.
I mean, the underlying thing here is if you don't give the child a chance to utilize language, they won't use it.
Right.
And so how many times do you see a child looking up at the parent to make the decision?
Right.
Because they're always making the decision. They're always, you know, and then eventually the kid doesn't have the voice to express the decision they want to make. And that's right. An important piece too, right? The integration of language.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you know, we talk about everyone having a voice and honestly, you know, in a family, it's a voice is having more than communication. Mm-hmm. You know, a voice is having an opinion. A voice is being able to say, I don't like this or I do like that. And I think to a degree, you know, kids should have that opportunity to, you know, to say, I don't like Brussels sprouts. I'll eat green beans, but I don't want Brussels sprouts. You know, I think that we have to hear that. You know, ultimately what's the thing that we want them to do? Do we want them to eat Brussels sprouts or do we want them to have a vegetable at dinner? You know what I mean? It's.
Yep. No, to get it done essentially.
Exactly. Exactly.
Look, let's, so you provided kind of a PDF document, which is great. Giveaway that we're going to do for our listeners. I will definitely put the link in the show notes, but it kind of gives us a roadmap for what we're talking about here.
Sure.
And you gave some action steps, and we've already kind of actually covered number one in the sense.
Yeah, we did.
Your kids control, but let's talk about like step number two. And this is almost how do you convey it?
Okay. So, step number one is giving them the control to make decisions and choices. But in making decisions and choices, there are consequences. And so, when I say the word consequence to most people, the first thing they think of is something bad. A consequence is bad. Well, in reality, a consequence is, it just is. It is the result. It's what happens. So the consequence of going outside in the rain with an umbrella means that you don't get your hair wet. The consequence of going outside without your boots in the snow or your feet get cold. Okay, so it just is. But it's important for kids also to not only make decisions and choices, but to understand the consequence of that choice or decision. So as an example, I had a student who wore the craziest clothes to school every day. And quite honestly, it was not something that was life-changing. It just was, but his parents understood that after a while. It was, I'm going to wear a pair of plaid pajama bottoms with a polka dot sweatshirt. Now, did it really matter? The consequences were he looked goofy, but he didn't care. So that consequence was of nothing to him. Now, if somebody had said to him, "You look stupid. You look like a clown. He may have felt differently about it.
Sure.
I'll go back to the consequence of drinking a beer or not drinking a beer. At 17, we do not want our kids drinking beer, right? Especially if they're out, especially if they've just gotten their driver's license. Okay. They need to understand what are the consequences of drinking a beer if they go out. There's a lot. And not only life and death, but in the legal system, there's consequences for mom and dad. You don't want to do those things. So understanding the positive and the negative are really important. And as parents, it's important for us to lay those consequences out for the kids, but also understand the consequences to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. And each, we talk about this, I feel like every episode, but each kid is individual, all three of them here in my house. It's like, we go through the jacket battle every day now in the, Northeast is being this cold, but
yeah.
And someday, I look at my wife and I'm like, let's let them learn. We can't fight the fight anymore.
Right.
And my daughter is a hot box. So she wants to just, so we got to sometimes bend differently to each child.
Absolutely. It's
interesting when you talk about if you surveyed 100 parents, 98 would say a consequence is a negative result.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I don't think you're gonna turn parents into changing the definition.
No.
But it's more of an understanding of there is a result. I mean, maybe you change the language. You're better off changing the language than you are changing. To get them to believe that different philosophy.
And they even carry it a step further too. I was just thinking, like, we don't celebrate the positive consequence.
Right.
So we would talk about the negative consequences. You went outside with your jacket, you got it wet or cold or whatever, but we don't say because you wore your jacket, you weren't cold
right.
or wet.
Right. You're trying to ignore that fact. Yeah. Well, it's like celebrating the small wins. To me, if your daughter wears her jacket to school, that's a win. But we forget that. So, maybe changing the language from consequence to results and wins or something along those, I don't know. Something to think about.
Yeah,
it's whatever. Yeah, what works. So let's. So can we spin it from a consequence back to the antecedent concept?
Yeah. Right?
So last time when we first met, we were talking about that behavior isn't always what you see.
Right. Right.
Behavior isn't always just kind of, we always focus on the outcome.
Right. Exactly.
Or the result, but the behavior in the moment, and we get very reactive, you know, and prior to that, like, what do you think are some of the, like, the five top things that would lead to a behavioral challenge?
Right. There's a lot of things that you know, so many. Well, I think first is not being able to communicate or not understanding what a child is saying to you. That's the first thing. But I also think when kids don't get what they want, you know, they have their mind set on something. And another thing that very often, you know, prior to the actual behavior is an anticipation that there's going to be a response from mom or dad or a caregiver that they don't want. So they're already anticipating. They're little grown-ups anticipating with anxiety all these things that could possibly happen. You know, so I mean, I think that those are, I would say those are the top three for me anyway. I'm going to throw another one in there. Knowing that they're doing something or going to do something that they shouldn't do. So I'll give you an example. I had a student who at home used to sneak a cigarette. Now, mind you, I had elementary school students. I had little guys. Okay. But mom and dad were smokers. Mm-hmm. So little guy would go and, you know, lift a cigarette. He knew how to do the lighter. I mean, he was quite advanced. And so mom and dad could see this tornado coming, because he would start to act a little bit goofy because he knew he was doing something he wasn't supposed to do. And in the past, he'd been caught. So why was he going to do it again? Okay. You know, why was he going to do it again? He wants mom and dad's attention. It doesn't matter how he gets it, but you know.
Yeah. No, it's a pattern. Yeah. It's, you know, I would almost add to that. You know, sometimes we don't realize that what's going on around, whether there's an issue with a family member or, you know, something that they absorb and the way they're processing it really has to be taken into account as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So maybe we can talk about, because like the next step is you know, kind of a schedule and being flexible with everything kind of being different nowadays. And, you know, we're in school, we're not in school, practice is happening. This isn't, you know, maybe we can talk about that and how to help kids kind of cope with being flexible.
So I suggest something called flexible scheduling. And this is something that I learned when I was in the classroom. And I've actually seen it modified even a little bit more through some of my student teachers who now have their own classrooms. But what I mean by that is creating two different lists for each day. And I know that it sounds like a lot, but there are things that you're going to do every day anyway. So I suggest that you create a must-do list, things that you have to get done. And quite honestly, this isn't just for the kids. This is for anybody. Okay, I do this now. I've got it on my whiteboard. I've got my daily do's, my must-do's, and my want-to-do's. And as I get things finished, I cross them off. So I make a list of all the things that I have to do. So it could be walk the dog, fold the laundry, make my bed, pack my backpack, get my lunch. Those are all things that we could expect kids to do, right? And then there's the want to do list. Well, I want to play ball. I want to play on the computer. I want to, I don't know, play with the Game Boy, whatever. I want to do a jigsaw puzzle, whatever. And throughout each day, as you're going through the must-do lists, make sure that you're incorporating something that the kids want to do. So even as an adult, you know, there are certain things I have to do. So I get a certain number of those things done and I go, okay, I'm going to take 15 minutes and I'm going to sit and read my book, or I'm going to sit and, or I'm going to go out for a run, or I'm going to do something other than what's on that list of things that I have to get done. Sure. And I also say, start with the hardest thing if you can. So kids have to, are either going to school or they're part-time in school or they're all the way on Zoom or whatever, or the case may be. And, you know, this is one of the things in the American educational system is that we expect kids to sit for 6.5 hours with, you know, a 20-minute break for lunch. And if we're lucky, 15 minutes of recess. But they have to go sit in their seat and they have to do math and they have to do reading and that's not the way we're built. They're right. Built to be up and moving.
Yep.
So to be able to give the kids a time to do something that they choose. And again, this all goes together. You know, if you do this, then you can do that. This is your choice. Here's the consequences of not doing or doing. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of all married.
Yeah, no, I can see it. I mean, and you need it, you know, and I can only talk from experience. It has to be kind of consistent over time. Absolutely. To start to see results.
Right. So, you know, and that's the other thing is, you know, you cannot expect your kids to go from acting out crazy to being these, you know, perfect children. First of all, you should never expect your kids to be perfect.
Right.
That is an unrealistic goal. They are not going to behave 100% of the time.
Right.
But if they behave 90% of the time, 75% of the time, you're in good shape.
Sure.
I mean, really. And, you know, as my mother always said, I'd rather that you behave really well while we're out and misbehave when we're home, because if you misbehave when you're home, I can say go to your room.
You can do things.
Okay, you know, mom.
When you look at the idea of scheduling, right? Mm-hmm. Like go back to like an office job. If you sure. If you hire somebody new, mm-hmm. you can train them really well, and in you know in about a month or so, they can take off so much stuff from your plate.
Absolutely. Right?
But most people don't do that. Most people just, they come in and then they're just like another thing they have to do. And then they don't train them well. And for like a year and a half, this person's not really helping them because they didn't spend the time. And it's very similar to this kind of this approach with scheduling mm-hmm. and kind of, you know, and even what Brian was talking about, like, you know, this kind of reactive, you know, approach to parenting where you're on your heels
right.
in those moments, you know, and it's like, if you just take a, just to take a little bit of time to get your week organized. I used to, you know, I used to have, well, like when my wife was, she would, you know, do a lot of things on the Saturday morning, mm-hmm. but it was with me. It was like, if their kids are with me, I'm like 10 o'clock to 10:03, 10:30 to 10:15. Right. And I almost needed that just to kind of give myself some structure so that they can kind of, you know, do their thing, you know? But I think that's hard for parents to kind of get ahead of it. And realize that, you know what, you put the time in now, you don't have right. to worry on your heels all week. And that's a big stressor, right?
Right, absolutely. You know, one, you talk about in an office building, and I know that there, and I can't think of the gentleman's name off the top of my head, but one of the things that he does is that he works, he's at his desk, totally focused for 50 minutes, and then he takes a 10-minute break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he's right back on again for another 50 minutes. And then he takes a 10-minute break and his break is not at his desk.
Right. Yeah. You know,
it's up walking around, go to the kitchen, get a glass of water, get tea, whatever you're doing, but you cannot stay at your desk for that amount of time. And I think that we can do the same sort of things with kids. And that's what I mean. You know, here you go. You've got 45 minutes of a lesson on Zoom. Get through your 45 minutes. When you're finished, you'll have 15 minutes to go play on the Game Boy, go run around in the backyard, you know, have a snack, do something other than your schoolwork, mm-hmm. and then come back again.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not saying, you know, they should have a free for all. You know, it's not a slumber party. We're not having ice cream for lunch. We're not having popcorn at, you know, 4 a.m. But to give children the opportunity to do things that they want to do throughout the day motivates them to keep moving.
Right. Yeah. My mentor would say, you teach them how to have a timeout. So timeout is not always a negative response.
That's right.
You show them what a break looks like by taking a break yourself. And I think we're not doing that. We're not emulating the behavior as parents. Mm-mm. Right? Mm-mm.
It's funny we got to this topic because literally before we got on, our mutual friend Greg Roulette was on speaking about this topic and saying, like, why he said, I schedule the things that I need to do for me on there first, you know, right. He said, and getting there, and doing it, you know, like I try to do it on a Sunday night, get the week out and say, you know, but he said, don't forget the self-care stuff as well. Cause that tends to get pushed to the back until you put everything else on your calendar. So,
well, and I think, you know, the other piece of it, and Darren, you kind of touched on that, is the fact that as parents, we have to model what we want to see. Our kids don't know how to do this. So it's our job to teach them. But first we have to recognize that, wait a minute, I'm not doing that. For a very long time, I didn't do that either. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you that, like I said, I make my lists and every morning I start my day with 20 minutes of journaling and 20 minutes of reading something, a book, you know, a novel. Typically I do something like right now I'm reading The Book of Joy by the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu. Yeah. So, I mean, it's important to, and I count that as my self-care, or at least part of it, because that gets my mindset for the day. Okay. I've done these things. I'm calm. Let's move on. Let's dive in and do what I need to do now.
I think in essence, what you're saying with the calendar is putting it in front of them. It's putting it on display. Mm-hmm. You've written it out. Mm-hmm. So it does kind of fill that anticipation void. Mm-hmm. So, okay, now I know what the day could possibly look at.
That's
look
right. Like.
It's that other one. It's the second calendar, right? This could also happen.
Right.
Yeah, and that's a little bit trickier, right? But I think it's kind of the same. It sounds to me like I'm not doing this. I should be, but the concept of sharing that, you know what, this is the day we want to happen, mm-hmm. but things happen, and this may be how the day ends. And then maybe there's just off the cuff, maybe there's an opportunity at the end of the day to write out what actually did happen.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and then you just show that life just kind of like, what does they say? Life is what happens while we're making other plans, you know?
That's exactly right. there's a lot of different ways to kind of set up the must do's and the want to do's. Mm-hmm. That's another podcast. You know, that's another guide. Yeah, right. Thank you very much, guys.
Have a nice day.
but seriously, there are a lot of different ways that you can do that. And that's all dependent on your kids too. Like for me, the whiteboard works. That doesn't work for my husband, Dr. Fred. And it doesn't work for my daughter, you know, or our daughter, Kristen. She has literally a calendar where she just puts everything down. Mm-hmm. That works for her, mm-hmm. you know? So it's finding what's gonna work best for each person, whether you make your lists every day or whether you make your lists every week, that's totally up to you.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. No, I mean,
either way, you gotta start imperfectly, right?
Right. Oh, absolutely. We're perfectly imperfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Perfectly imperfect.
But like you said, it's a guide and
right.
That kind of brings us back to this guide that you put together. A lot of action steps in here.
Yep.
Regain, you know, the title is Regain Control of Your Child and Your Life. Mm-hmm. Yes, please to both.
it's a family affair.
And like I said, we'll definitely have a link for listeners to be able to access this piece. Yeah. And we'll also include you know, some of your information, because you definitely have some good stuff on your website as well.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah. Cool.
Well, Dr. Terry, we really appreciate you being here with us today. I know I say this a lot, but and I'll say it again, this will probably not be the last time. And we look forward to seeing you again soon.
I look forward to seeing you guys again soon. Thanks again for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast with your hosts, Darren and Brian. Find them on social media at Sound Foundations for Parenting. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a review and subscribe. And we'll catch you next time on the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast.